Welcome you all here this morning. Very cool and exciting morning. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1243. Senator Mayhew.
Mr. Chairman, can I come up with my constituent, Judge Lemhart?
That would be appropriate.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm State Senator Mayhew, Senate District 19, which consists of portions of Layton and Benton County. Senate Bill 1243 will allow justices of the peace to receive the same first benefits as other judges. Justice courts are important to the state for two primary reasons. First, justice courts are community courts and provide services at a local level, frequently in rural communities far away from county seats. Second, justice courts reduce the caseloads of county circuit courts by handling over 150,000 civil and criminal cases each year. The cost to upgrade 22 justices of the peace first members from general members to judge members is $190,976. To avoid an unfunded mandate, the counties will continue to pay the employer contribution at a general member level, and the state will pick up the additional employer contribution required to reach the judge members level. I would like to introduce an amendment, Senate Bill 1243-1, to state that if a county establishes a new Justice of the Peace District after the effective date of this bill, the county should then pay the additional employer contribution required by making them judge members of PERSE. This would not be an unfunded mandate for newly created districts. In conclusion, it is only fair that justices of the peace receive the same retirement benefits as other judges. Currently, justice courts bring in $8.5 million in state fees each biennium at no cost to the state. Counties with justice courts pay all operating costs. I urge the support of the bill, and I urge you to send Senate Bill 1243 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. And I would like to introduce Judge Lemhart at this time.
Thank you, Senator Yee. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Chad Lemhaus, Justice of the Peace for Linn County District 4, located in Harrisburg. I'd like to begin my remarks by explaining what justice courts are and what they do. Basically, justice courts are courts of limited general jurisdiction. We handle both criminal and civil matters in a general sense, but we have limits on the matters that we do handle. In the case of criminal jurisdiction, we handle everything except for the trial of felonies. In the case of civil jurisdiction, we handle matters where the amount in controversy does not exceed $5,000. The jurisdictional limit is being raised in this session from $3,500 to $5,000. So whenever there's an issue of damages or the recovery of property that is valued at not more than $5,000, then a justice court has jurisdiction of the cause. We also have a small claims jurisdiction, which includes the same jurisdictional limit, that is $5,000. As Senator Yee mentioned, justice courts contribute substantially to the state of Oregon, both from a financial standpoint with respect to the fact that they generate about $8.5 million to the state fines and fees account during the current biennium, and also from the standpoint that during this biennium, justice court will also handle about 300,000 cases, which would otherwise have to be filed in circuit court. Justice courts are state courts, and I use state with a lowercase f, not state courts with a capital F, in the sense that they are administered and operated by the Oregon Judicial Department. They're state courts in the sense that justices of the peace exercise state judicial power under the guidance of state statutes and administer state law. And so all the matters, essentially, which would be filed in a justice court, were not for justice court, would have to be filed in circuit court. As I mentioned, the contributions that justice courts provide are fairly significant. And what we're asking for in return is to be treated in the same manner in which the circuit court judges and the other elected judges in this state are treated. Justices of the peace are basically the only judges that are exercising state court judicial power to serve a six-year elective term that are not part of the first judge member group. I suspect that probably originated back when the original judge's retirement fund was created, and for whatever reason, justices of the peace were omitted from the original judge's retirement fund. When the retirement fund was melded into the PERS program, again, for whatever reason, justices of the peace were omitted from inclusion as judge members. And so what we would like to do is correct what we consider to be an oversight and include the justices of the peace within that group of, so that they have judge member status as PERS members. There's a cost to doing this, and because of the fact that we have a ballot measure 30 that requires that any unfunded mandate may be refused by a county, then the bill is crafted so that the extra expense would be picked up by the state of Oregon for the employer's contribution. This totals about $190,000 over the biennium. If you look at the revenue produced by justice courts to the state fine and fees account over the course of the past several years, you'll notice that that amount has increased by about $500,000 more or less a year for the last two or three years. So what we're asking for is an amount of an expenditure of state funds that would actually probably be about half of what the increase in revenue to the state of Oregon will be during the next biennium. So basically, the costs are going to be paid, the cost for this program will be paid for by the increase in revenue to the state that is generated by justice courts. And you say, how does that happen? Well, because the filings, of course, increase typically in justice courts as they do in other courts year by year. And then also, this legislature is being asked to add some Oregon State police troopers to the road force. As you may have noticed in the statistics that we produce, about 135,000 of those cases that we handle each year are traffic cases, and a substantial number of those are generated by OSP troopers. Half of the fines that are collected by justice courts and all the unitary assessments that are collected by justice courts on OSP trooper citations are paid to the state of Oregon. And so as the number of troopers on the road increases, the number of citations filed in justice courts increases, and the amount of funds generated in revenue to the state of Oregon also increases. And so there's going to be a steady increase. It's probably going to be about the same that we've seen in the past two or three years. Questions so far from members of the committee?
Mr. Courtney, you have any questions? I would I have a question as to your present retirement program. What is happening at present time?
Presently, most of the justices of the peace are PERS members in the general membership pool. There are 29 justices of the peace, and I believe 22 of them are actually PERS members. Some of the justices of the peace serve in counties that are not part of the pool, PERS program, such as Tillamook County and Klamath County, Wheeler County, Gilliam County, and those justices of the peace would not be covered by this bill. There are also justices of the peace in Baker County, and although Baker County is a PERS county, the number of hours that they actually serve is below the minimum limit for service, or for coverage, I should say, as a PERS member, and so these two members would also be excluded from coverage under the bill. Basically, we're not broadening the coverage to include any additional people. What we're trying to do is make sure that the coverage fairly reflects what the judges are accomplishing, both for the state as well as for the communities in which they live. And I will point out that the justice courts are community courts, not only in the sense that Senator Yee described, but we live in the communities that we serve. We have to be residents of our district. We go to the same shops, we walk the same streets, and we send our kids to the same schools that the people who appear before us in both criminal and civil matters walk, attend, and send their kids to. And so we're community judges in the truest sense of the word. We're the judges and the courts that are closest to the people, and we have jurisdiction over those matters which are you might consider quality of life matters, the minor disputes between neighbors, which both involve civil and criminal matters, vandalism, petty theft, squabbles between neighbors over who owns what piece of property, whose wheelbarrow belongs to who, and what power cell belongs to what person. Those are the kinds of cases that we have to adjudicate on a regular basis. Are there other questions that I can answer? Senator Courtney?
Senator Courtney, you need clarification here. What they are, they are presently members of FIRST, the General FIRST retirement program, and this bill would bring them into the judges. Level of the FIRST retirement system.
Are you aware, like Mr. Chairman, of what we're going to do to FIRST in this legislative session?
Well, I know there are a number of bills that are being considered with respect to FIRST, but frankly, no, sir, I'm not aware.
You might not be so anxious to do this if you know how we're going to eviscerate and destroy FIRST by the end of the session under Senate Bill 722. So let me just, I'm all happy for you, I sympathize with you, but you better be very careful about what we're doing this session, or you might think you'd be better off going outside the system to take care of your retirement. I just want to tell you that straight up, because it's about to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Senate Bill 722, which is going to save everybody's life. Just a little statement that, Your Honor, that you better be careful, because you might get what you ask for, and there's an old saying, sometimes you get what you ask for, and you know what? You're out there on food stamps. So just be aware, Your Honor. 722 is coming down the railroad tracks. I hate it, but it's coming down, so if that's what you want, that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. Are there further questions of our witnesses? Not, thank you very much. We're going to call Richard Triska, Cindy Cable, and Maria Heltner.
I'll waive my appearance because I think
all right. Thank you.
You want to move?
Just if they move the way it means, we need to move it.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Cindy Cable. I'm the Justice of the Peace from the Florence District in Wayne County. The comments I wish to add to Judge Lemhouse's comments are that as a Justice of the Peace for the last 9 years, I need to indicate to you that justices serve at a far lower compensation level than circuit court judges, though we handle very similar matters. In addition to that, I'd like to point out that when a person makes the decision to serve their community as a justice of the peace, they're stepping back from being able to be involved in the community life the way other people have the opportunity to. And I might say that I was raised in a very political family with a great deal of responsibility toward my community and toward social issues. And as a judge, I'm not free to speak out on those issues the way I would if I were not a judge. The compensation level that I currently receive has not changed more than a couple percentages in the last 9 years. And that we see this bill as an equity issue. We also see this bill as a way to attract and retain qualified people in these very important positions. The cost to the taxpayer for a justice court position is far less than the cost for a circuit court judge position. And as you can see by the statistics that I've provided to you, we handle a substantial number of cases that would otherwise go into the circuit court. Those are the sum total of my comments this morning, unless there are questions.
Any questions? Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Starr and members of the committee. My name is Maria Keltner. I represent this morning the Association of Oregon Counties. The Association of Oregon Counties is not opposed to this bill as written, as it does not increase the cost to counties for this change. However, just for the record, the Association of Counties would be opposing the bill if it did increase the cost to counties for PERS benefits until those issues are resolved. I would add my understanding, and I will sit or stand corrected if I'm wrong, is that there isn't any change on the judge benefits in Senate Bill 722 presently. I may be wrong about that.
Further questions? Not. Thank you very much. Can we ask a question of the county
clerk? I'm sorry.
We missed an opportunity. Have you had a chance to look at the amendment?
I sent out the amendment last night. I have not had a chance to check with any of the counties or the association in terms of a position on the amendment.
Let's amend it and send it.
There we go, amend it and send it.
Close the public hearing and open our discussion on
move dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1243, Mr. Chair. Dash one, excuse me.
Thank you. Senator Courtney has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 1243. Any discussion?
Yeah.
Any opposition? Not ordered.
Move Senate Bill 1243 is amended to do pass. To raise the means.
Senator Courtney, it's moved. Senate Bill 1243 is amended to do pass to raise the means. Clerk, call roll.
Senator
Courtney. Cody votes aye.
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 Senator Stroh.
Aye. I received the necessary majority. Senate Bill 1243 is moved to raise the means of the new pass. Close the work session.
Take the third tier.
And?
Take
the third tier?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. You have Representative Crummell here on...
He was here. Where is he? There he is.
You're here on House Bill 2704. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2704. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jerry Crummell. I'm State Representative from House District 27. And 2704 is a bill that I sponsored. It would create a mandatory registration for athletic trainers in the state of Oregon that currently is a voluntary registration program that has been in existence since approximately 1993. This program came out of a full licensure attempt in the 91 and 93 sessions. During that time, the program has been semi-successful, and currently there's approximately 65 voluntary registrants. The purpose of House Bill 2704 is to create a mandatory registration for athletic trainers, and the reason is because at this time, there are still situations in our state where the expectation for level of competence of athletic trainer and the actual competence may not be where they need to be. And so what this would do is that if a person is going to call themselves an athletic trainer, they would indeed have to be a registered athletic trainer. There's nothing in the bill that requires schools to hire an athletic trainer, only that, also coaches and volunteers for schools and little league organizations and that sort of thing are exempted. So there's nothing in here that says that anybody has to hire an athletic trainer or a registered athletic trainer, but the purpose is to make sure that if someone coming in is calling themselves one, then they truly are, they truly do meet the competency levels expected. And with that, I will, be quiet and be glad to take any questions you might have.
Chair?
Senator Courtney.
I could speak volumes on this because of my role at Westmore University. The athletic department reports to me, and I hired the athletic trainer, and I'm heavily involved with athletic trainers, assistant athletic trainers, internships. I think this is where I first met Representative Cromwell. If people had any idea the incredible burden and position that athletic trainers find themselves on an instant basis on practice fields and in game situations, they would very much appreciate the fact that a profession was coming forward and saying, we want to make sure that people that are in our profession are fully trained and fully capable of taking care of the lives, particularly of our young people, because that's basically what they're doing. What I find so contradictory is we just fought a battle over podiatrists versus orthopedics, and we fought a battle over ophthalmologists versus optometrists. This is going the other direction in terms of scope of practice. This is, in effect, raising the standards, if you want my opinion, or making sure that a certain group of people that deal with a medical area are very, very confident you can rely on them. I think it's unfortunate that there isn't mandatory language in here that high schools and colleges have to hire athletic trainers that are certain, that have certain qualifications. Because whether you know it or not, your kid or your daughter, or in your case, maybe, I mean, your grandchildren, I'll tell you, they go down, you're going to, and the first person they're going to see is not a doctor usually, although there are there is an orthopedic surgeon on the sidelines voluntary-wise. I think at U of O and all those football games, there's at West Morgan University, and sometimes the orthopedic surgeons show up for the high school games. You're going to want these athletic trainers to know what to do and what not to do and to do it quickly. So kudos to Representative Cromwell in a big, big way. I just wish that this was mandatory in terms of school districts and colleges and universities, because these guys and girls make a mistake, and by the time the orthopedics get to them or the surgeons get to them, they've got serious trouble on their hands. And I also think what you don't realize is coaches, who are some of the most egotistical, strong-willed persons in the world, with the exception of politicians, and obnoxious people in the world, with the exception of politicians, and I can say that, make their lives hell, because what they will simply try to do is make them, force them to say that kid's got, you've got to give me this star, you've got to release this kid, you've got to let this kid play this game, and they have to literally say, he, she does not play. So, if you didn't need that, I just thought you might like to hear that from someone. You know, I just thought you'd like to hear that. I know you don't want to hear it, Senator Starr, but I thought Lee Dreyer might want to hear it as a former coach and things like that.
Appreciate very much that help we have, assistance here. We couldn't do without it. No further questions of the witness. We do have one further witness signed up, Stephen Kafori.
Oh, let's see, that's where I'm performing.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here this morning to represent the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. With me, I have this morning the chairman of our legislative committee, Margaret Harris, who's a physical therapist. We'd like to echo what Senator Courtney has just said. We feel very strongly that there's a real problem with people on athletic fields and in athletic contests where there is not someone there who is trained, and that people use the word athletic trainer very, very loosely these days. It can mean someone who has just had a 5-minute course on how to wrap ankles. We see sometimes the results of people who haven't been treated properly in our physical therapy clinics, and we're very, very supportive of this bill. We would like to comment on one word, however. If you look on the page 1, section 1, line 8, the word generally, this flexibility, range of motion, speed or stamina, generally conducted in association with athletic educational institutions. We'd like to have that word generally deleted, and I'll have Ms. Harris start what the meaning of that word is, why it's important in this sentence, and why we think it's important for the bill to have that word deleted.
So,
for the record, introduce yourself.
Oh, my name's Margaret Harris. I'm a physical therapist. And the word generally is allowing athletic trainers to practice in a wider field than what they've been trained for. Most athletic trainers have been trained and had verification as at a team for sports athletic events. And that's where they belong, is in association with educational institutions and professional and amateur sports events. And taking away the word generally means that they could possibly practice outside of that scope. And
we're not taking away generally. Leaving
generally. Oh, leaving generally in, yeah. Means that they would could possibly practice outside of that scope. And that is just our concern, is that athletic trainers going into those situations outside of their scope. We've spoken, we have a therapist that is also an athletic trainer that is involved in the Oregon Athletic Trainers Association, and he has taken this to the athletic trainers, and they also agree that the word generally is broadening their scope of practice beyond what they felt comfortable with.
The Athletic Trainer Association agrees with the Physical Therapy Association that word is out of place in this bill.
Okay. I thought I heard you say that basically the comments of,
Margaret Harris.
Margaret, that the word generally is a dangerous word here, that you're saying the Athletic Trainers agree with you.
Yes.
Well, then, was Representative Cuomo, can I just ask, know about this? I mean, because I have to admit, something's just gone off in the
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Courtney, no. I was not made aware that this was something that was desired. I have no idea. No one from the Oregon Athletic Trainers Society has called me and said that they would like to have that word removed or that they're in agreement with the Physical Therapy Association with regards to that word. I think one point is that the rulemaking ability of the board will be able to be more specific with regards to scope of practice. And I think that the word generally is an accurate word with regards to where athletic trainers practice. There are a number of voluntary registered athletic trainers that do work in sports medicine clinics side by side with physical therapists. And generally, I think their assignments are with people that are involved with educational institutions, professional or amateur sports activities. And when I say amateur sports activities, that could include the weekend warrior that plays softball for, you know, Walmart or whoever, or as a weekend runner and that sort of thing. So I think the word generally is quite accurate in there. And it also does allow for the physical therapist to assign an athletic trainer that does work for them on some other cases as a physical therapist may feel comfortable with. But I think in the rulemaking that would be the case. But no, the Oregon Athletic Trainer Society did not contact me, nor did Mr. Kafori, and I did not know that the word generally was an issue.
It's the first you've heard of it then?
Yes, sir.
Including over, okay. Well, all right. Where's the word? You should help me, Margaret. Help me in the bill. Where's the word?
Where's your page 1, line 8.
All right. Let me just help me.
Mr. Chair, if I might, while Senator Courtney is looking that up, I would like to apologize to Representative Kremer this morning and just state that at the end of the session, things happen on a very even in communication. We have some amendments that are in Legislative Council being drafted right now, but they aren't ready yet. Our communications back and forth has been very hurried, and it was not saying that we didn't want to express our concern, that we didn't know what our concern was. We've been talking with our folks over the email the last couple of days. We've been talking back and forth with the Athletic Training Association just yesterday. I had talked with their lobbyists and said that we had some concerns, but that I couldn't tell them what those were because our communications was in the process of going on. It's certainly not any attempt to hide the ball, and I think in good faith, this is we've just been working under tremendous time crunch, Mr. Chair.
Senator Jabari. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why is that a particularly important word? It appears not in any definition of what trainers do. but in who an athlete is. I don't get the tie. It's not restricting the tie. It doesn't, the word generally is in line 8 doesn't have anything to do specifically with what athletic directors, athletic trainers do.
But it's who they treat. It's determining who athletic trainers treat and the situations that they treat those people in. So it's setting up a place of where they practice.
Show me how it does that.
By determining, by identifying who an athlete is, and then what an athletic injury is determines who and what an athletic trainer is going to treat.
If you read sub 2, athletic injury means an injury occurring as a result of participating as an athlete, so that ties back into what an athlete is.
And then it goes down to practicing athletic training means application by a registered athletic trainer of principles and methods of, and it goes down and defines what an athletic trainer is going to treat. But it never really says what is the field or area that the athletic trainer is going to be treating.
Mr. Chair, may I respond to that? As you read through the bill, the definition of athlete, I think, is very accurate. And generally, athletes are involved in those types of activities that are enumerated, their educational institutions, professional or amateur sports activities. By putting in statute what an athletic injury is, that will definitely limit what the athletic trainer can treat, and I think that's an important aspect. Then going to sub 4, the practice athletic training means the application by a registered athletic trainer with principles and methods of, and those are 5 of the 6 domains that have been identified by the National Athletic Trainers Association in conjunction with the certifying agency of health professions, as well as the American Medical Association, has worked with the national organization in terms of defining the areas that athletic trainers should be working. So these are actually taken from the latest role delineation study of athletic trainers and what they should be, what their domains of treatment should be. The 6th one that's not mentioned here is healthcare administration. So, and I didn't feel that it was necessary to put that into the statute. All right. So because that would be, for example, the head athletic trainer at University of Oregon administering the athletic training program is what would be involved there. And I didn't feel that that's something that needs to be into the statute. But the thing with the areas where people are actually working with the athletes and their treatment and what they're allowed to do, I felt that was most important to have in the statute. So that's why we put that in there, delineated it out. And then the flexibility of the board is going to be to identify, I think, in conjunction with input from a lot of different folks, what constitutes prevention of athletic injuries, what constitutes recognition, evaluation, immediate care, what constitutes rehabilitation and reconditioning of athletic injuries, and the education and counseling components and healthcare administration. So I think those are the areas that.
I'd just like to recommend, here we go, scope of practice again. I hate these battles. It appears to be this is a surprise. I hope today we don't pass it out today to see if they can get together. If I have to vote to break this thing, I'll vote one way or the other. But I was hoping maybe you'd direct them to see if they, because I was at the bleed coming in here, the bill was all right. Now I'm getting hit with this word, and I don't want to play God in terms of physical therapist versus athletic trainers. I'm being very honest with you, so I don't know. Yeah, I got the impression that President Crummell was unaware of this up to this moment. Is that correct?
That's correct. I didn't know that this was
right. And I don't know whether that doesn't mean what he says he's not going to stick by it. But I hope you're not going to ask us to move it for just a second, if you don't mind. Mr. Chair, to just wait so see if they can get together or not or whatever. If they can't, we got to go up or down, fine. But I just, that's all I'm asking.
We will, since we do exactly as the court has suggested, I want to set this over until Tuesday. We will only want to know. We'll have only a work session on Tuesday.
Okay.
We'll want to know that the solution has been reached and that we will then move the bill down the time.
Thank you.
Yeah. If we need to make that decision ourselves, we'll do so.
Right.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2704. And we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1245. Jerry Schmidt. Dash 9 amendment.
Correct, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm here today representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. This proposal I brought before you is the Dash 9 amendments. Earlier testimony I gave before you, we attempted to take amendments and use this notice provision to roll all the bills that dealt with notice provisions from the various agencies into one bill. We became aware last meeting we had on this bill that there was some drafting errors and some opposition to the language as we have it currently. With that, I decided to narrow the scope of the bill to just one agency, and that was the Land Conservation and Development Commission. I do intend to work further with the rest of the agencies on this issue because this is certainly a high-profile issue to many of my membership as well as some other organizations. And in fact, I was approached earlier before this bill came up to try to make this into a voters initiative where this would actually come before the voters. I didn't think that this would be a good public policy to establish in front of the voters. I thought we could probably work this out amongst the agencies and the various interested parties about allowing notice for public, for entrance by agencies onto private lands. I still intend to work on that issue, and I still intend to try and come up with a compromise during the interim with the rest of the agencies about how they give notice to folks and how they enter onto lands. It's a very complex issue, especially with the various agencies that deal with health and safety issues, licensees, Water Resources Department, Department of Ag, ODF&W. At this point, I've amended a very narrow portion of the enabling statutes of LCDC. Basically, it only applies to a very small portion of their statute, which refers to areas of concern. I just became aware this morning that now LCDC opposes this bill, so they will be giving testimony, I understand, expressing their opposition to be included as I guess, the guinea pig on this issue. This is a strong issue with us, and we will continue to press this. This is probably one of our most important legislative agendas about trying to come up with some type of plan about how agencies enter into private property. And at this, we've narrowed the scope drastically to try and fix this issue so that we can move forward now and during the interim to offer some permanent solutions to this issue. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll take any questions.
Senator Bart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry, what would you envision here? I mean, I'm trying to envision the case where LCDC would be entering onto private property without permission from somebody.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I was trying to envision the same thing. I can't for the life of me figure out how an agency with their responsibilities would ever enter property without notice. I mean, that just, I can't fathom that. So, I mean, I was caught a little bit unaware this morning that there would be some type of opposition to this. So you'll have to ask them. I have no idea how that would ever.
Your agenda is just a starting place?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, my agenda here is to try and get this process going and to try and establish a procedure and then work with the other agencies during the interim to see if we can come up with a more comprehensive solution that involves all the rest of the agencies. For instance, just this last week, I got six phone calls from some of my membership scattered throughout Marion County complaining ODFW was entering upon private property without notice. I live in Washington County. I have just received a notice 3 weeks ago from ODFW requesting permission to enter my property. So there seems to be some mixed things going on with some of the agencies, because in this case, in my own personal property, ODFW did notify me, did send a letter, did ask permission to enter the property, gave a phone number for me to contact. I have contacted that phone number. They haven't returned the phone call yet, but they are going through a process here of trying to establish a rapport and establish some type of permission requirements. This was not true in Marion County. They were evidently were doing a stream survey of various streams located south and east of and west of Salem, and doing some fish counts. And they evidently crossed property without the owner's knowledge. In two cases, even went across no trespassing signs. And there were some folks pretty upset. Again, they weren't upset the fact that they were there. They were upset the fact that they didn't notify them in advance and get permission. The owners in all cases told me that they would have given them permission. They just wished that they would have been notified. So I'm trying to head off problems before they occur, and this is the issue here, trying to move this process forward and keep this conflict resolution to a minimum. Thank you, Senator Beyer.
Further questions? Okay, thank you. Oh, Bob. Rindy. Richard Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Rindy, and I'm with the Department of Land Conservation and Development here in opposition to Senate Bill 1245. The Attorney General's office has, as my understanding, did earlier submit extensive comments, including comments with regard to the one program that's now left in the bill, and that is the program under which areas of critical concern may be designated. That section of statute has never been implemented. It was, as my understanding, put into the statute in 1973 with Senate Bill 100. It is a section that authorizes LCDC to recommend to the legislature that you designate an area of critical concern should there be a reason to do that. To date, in 26 years of this program, LCDC has never made such a recommendation, and the legislature has never designated such an area. If in the future there is reason to call out a special area of critical concern, and I wouldn't know what such an area would look like today, but if that does occur, it can only occur if you, the legislature, choose to designate it. And in such an event, my expectations would be that if there is necessity for some sort of inspection or any violation or anything of that nature, that would come out in the legislation at the time you were to designate such an area. In short, there's really no problem here to solve. There's no reason at this point in time to start establishing rules for entry in order to inspect a violation of something that we don't even know what it is, and if in the future we did know what it was, that would be a good subject of the legislation and would be perfectly appropriate at the time for you to decide just how that ought to occur. I do want to point out that we have we don't enter private property and have no need to, and there's no history of this. The director of our department, after Mr. Schmidt's comments to the interim committee, did approach Mr. Schmidt to see if he was aware of any violations of law or in any other way a trespass of a member or an employee of DLCD on private property. He confirmed what he just told you. He knew of none. We know of none. There's no reason for us to do that because a violation of a land use code is always an action taken by a local government to approve something that would be in violation of a state rule or law. And that's always required to be sent to LCDC. There's never a reason for us to inspect private property. But in this particular case of this bill, we have no idea of what that would be and the circumstances under which we would have to inspect or a local government. So just to conclude, I see no reason for this legislation, and we would hope that you wouldn't adopt it with us as the guinea pig, as was stated earlier. Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, Richard Whitman from the Oregon Department of Justice, Assistant Attorney General. I'm here to testify today on Senate Bill 1245 and the -9 amendments. I'm not going to go through the testimony that I gave previously in any great detail, but I do want to remind you of a couple of key points from that testimony as it pertains to LCDC and areas of critical concern as they would be affected by the -9 amendments that are now before you. First of all, the general rule is that governmental entities may not enter private property without either a warrant or the permission of the property owner. There are some exceptions to that, and probably the two most important exceptions to that are where there is an emergency, a threat to public health or safety, or where there is evidence of a violation of law that is going to be lost if the governmental entity can't get onto the property and document that evidence before it's lost. Those are the two most important exceptions. Areas of critical concern under ORS 197-405 and 410 are areas that are recommended for designation by LCDC to the legislature, as Mr. Windy stated. They're essentially areas where super regulations are adopted, special state use regulations, limiting uses within that area. And since there haven't been any recommended, it's sort of hard to envision what those might be, unrecommended over what, a 25-year period. The only thing we could speculate that might fall into that category would be for instance, a sports arena of regional importance or something like that where you might want special state regulations to be in place governing that use. Well, if that's the sort of instance where you would have an area of special concern, it makes absolutely no sense to require prior notice of LCDC entry or county entry onto that property. Those are the types of properties that we're talking about. The other problem with this bill, in terms of technical problems with it, is that it removes county and LCDC authority to go onto public property. So if one of these areas of critical concern is in fact public property, as I think it might be fairly likely to be, and that is a type of public property such as a security installation of some sort that public access is not normally allowed to for a member of the public, then the agency would not have the authority at all to go onto that property. So there are some technical problems with this bill in addition to some conceptual problems. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Mr. Barr.
sounds like then the major concern is removing county authority to go on to public property.
Chairman Starr, Senator Beyer, that is one of the concerns. The entry authority that's provided under this statute that would be amended is not only for LCDC, but for county governments as well. And it would remove their authority to go on to public property and would require them to obtain prior permission from the property owner on private property.
How does it do that?
Well, the first way in which it affects public property is it deletes the reference to public property in line 12-9 amendments on page 1. And then if you look at lines 4 and 5, right at the beginning of that section, it's both counties and the Land Conservation and Development Commission.
Not a particular issue for LCDC because, as Mr. Lindy said, they don't do that anyway. While I was working at the second conceivable time when you need that, and the legislation kicked in, but county governments are concerned that because it limits their ability to enforce their zoning codes.
Chairman Starr, Senator Beyer, I don't believe counties are currently concerned with this legislation because it would only affect county's authority in the event that an area of special concern is designated, and at this time there are none designated. So it would have no current effect on counties in terms of their authority to enter property.
This only comes into play if there's this, quote, area of special concern or designated.
Any further questions?
Very much.
We're going to close public hearing on Bill 1245 and open the work session on Senate Bill 1245. It's the chair's opinion that we're not ready to move this bill. Is there any discussion?
What are we going to do? Why do we have this?
Well, so that we... I working here shorthanded with a short committee, but my feeling is that we will not move this. And do you have an opinion contrary-wise?
Well, my sense, as I understand where realtors are, is a matter of general rule. It makes sense to me that you would notify people, but this doesn't appear to do anything specifically other than perhaps set a benchmark. That's the only thing I can think of. I'm not sure it's a particularly good one.
Well, I think we've probably picked a faulty vehicle for trying to accomplish that. Valuable purpose, and I'm not ready to move ahead with it at present time.
Well, we haven't been closed down, right? The committee, we haven't been closed down.
That's correct.
There's always time.
There's always time.
Thank you.
Thank you. For that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1245, and we're going to reopen. We're going to open the work session on House Bill 2704. We had some conflict over a wording in the bill as presented to us, and that apparently has been resolved through discussions.
Mr. Chair, Stephen Kokori, representing the Oregon Physical Therapy Association, which you've talked with Sue Wilson, who will be the administrator of this new board in the hall. And what she said was that she thought this issue could be worked out through administrative rules and that physical therapists would be invited to join in discussions on those rules. I talked with Mr. Kosasan and I said that with that understanding, And she said if there was a problem, we'd come back next session, and I understand that that's always the case. With that understanding, I said to Mr. Kosestan that we'd be pleased to agree to withdraw our objection and let the bill go through as it is. And so we would request that the committee in this work session pass out 2704 in the form that you have it before you.
Chair.
Senator Corton.
We work session.
We're in work session.
I move House Bill 2704A and goes to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Corton has moved House Bill 2704 engrossed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Can the clerk call the roll?
Senator Corton?
Yes.
Senator
Byers? Aye.
Senator
Starhawk? Aye. I receive the necessary majority. Senate Bill 2704 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Corton will carry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2800. And we've got Dave Barrows, John Higginson.
Ah, the folks are weak.
Can't believe it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dave Barrows, representing Chemical Waste Management of the Northwest. With me is Mr. Don Higginson, who is legal counsel for the company here in Oregon. It's a little hard to talk about 2800 totally separately from 3616, but we will try, Mr. Chairman. When we get to the amendments that are before the committee to the A and Gross bill, they're amendments to both bills that deal with one subject. The preparatory remarks that I'd like to make are these. Chemical Waste Management owns and operates the only public hazardous waste disposal facility in Oregon or Washington at Arlington, Oregon. And it is the major recipient of hazardous waste from manufacturing companies in this area. There is, however, also a facility at Boise, Idaho, and you will hear from representatives of that facility as this discussion goes forward. The facility at Arlington, our company, is well managed. We have an outstanding relationship with the Department of Environmental Quality. They have supported both these bills, when they were in the House. And they came over to the Senate, I think, with maybe one no vote between the two bills. As you'll see from the letters, their Associated Oregon Industries is in support of both the bills. And we do have one area now, and I do need to be clear about this, Mr. Chairman. Department of Environmental Quality now has a concern about one section of 3616 when we get to that. But perhaps the best thing to do is start with 2800, have Mr. Higginson briefly describe it to you, and also describe the amendment, and that will kind of cover the amendments for both the bills, and then we can move forward in that way.
Thank you.
Chair Starr, Senators. Don Higginson, for the record. House Bill 2800 would continue in force a categories of disposal fees for waste disposed at the Arlington facility. The disposal fees go directly to the Department of Environmental Quality to support their hazardous waste and environmental cleanup programs. Historically, there has always been there was until recently a parity between the Idaho facility and the Oregon facility, and all waste was in both places was going in at $30 a ton. In 1995, Idaho changed their fees ostensibly to try to capture more waste, and Oregon responded and proposed and adopted some for a 2-year period some fees that were on balance tried to maintain a level playing field. We tried to match what Idaho was doing. In 1997, Idaho amended theirs again to lower their disposal fees. We again adjusted ours to try to maintain the same level playing field between the two facilities. This bill, 2800, continues the fees that have been in effect for the last 2 years for another 2 years, again in an attempt to maintain a level playing field. And there is one waste category, that's in the substantive part of this bill in big section C. It's a category of waste that, although we are authorized to accept it at Arlington, we have not received any of it over the last several years because our disposal fee is $30 for the method that we dispose it at, and the disposal fee in Idaho is $5. So our proposal here in this bill that was adopted by the House is to have a $7.50 fee for that category. And Idaho handles that waste in a slightly different way. They've gone through a fairly arduous process to delist the waste, but it still goes into their landfill. We have never felt that there's enough waste generated in Oregon to justify a two-year process and hundreds of thousands of dollars to delist it, so it goes into our landfill and it meets all the federal and state requirements. It's treated in the way that the federal and state law has said it needs to be treated in order to protect human health and the environment. So we have the authority to manage it. The DEQ has given us authority. Federal law gives us the authority, but we can't get any of it because our fee is $30 a ton. And so our suggestion in this bill that came out of the House is that the fee be at $7.50. And then the amendment that's proposed to this would, Arlington has the opportunity to have a hazardous waste recycling facility located at Arlington. And the proposal would be that if that recycling facility is located there, that there would be a $15 a ton fee for waste that goes into the recycling facility and comes out of product. If waste comes out of the recycling facility, it would still be at $30, but the amendment would make anything that turns into a product from the recycling facility, there would be a $15 a ton disposal fee for that.
Could I just add two things, Mr. Chairman? You have in all that material that we dumped on you a letter from Mr. Brett Wilcox indicating his strong support of the bill for the amendment to both bills. That deal with this recycling effort for a byproduct of the aluminum manufacturing process. This bill is critically important. This is a bill that if it does not pass, Mr. Chairman, and the sunset doesn't get moved out, what will happen is that on July 1, we will then go back to every waste stream that comes into the Arlington facility will go back to $30. That will put us in such a terribly non-competitive position that the facility could be in serious jeopardy. Please remember that much of the money that is used by the Department of Environmental Quality to fund their solid and hazardous waste program comes from the fees generated at the hazardous waste facility at Arlington. We have been a major funder of this DEQ programs, and it is critical that this bill continue this varying fee structure in order to keep us competitive with the Idaho facility. And I would also say, if I may, Mr. Chairman, there will be proposed amendments to this large subsection C in here, and we resist those amendments strongly. This is not about public safety or public health or anything else. It's purely economics. And it strikes us that it has value to the Oregon system to support the facility here in Oregon, and that's what we would hope you would do.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
We call...
I can ask a question.
Yes, please.
Maybe you said this. You do know that there's a constitutional issue that's been raised on this. Are you familiar with this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney, the constitutional question that I think has been raised is on Section 1 of 3616, as I understand it. I have not heard any. We've only really addressed 2800.
Okay. Just so you know, I don't want to catch you unaware, but yeah. I got some little birdie came to see me before I walked in here. Are you familiar with the little birdie that came to see me?
Probably am, Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney.
Okay. So his name is Senator Bryant.
I understand.
He's your think you're a friendly bird that you like so much, but he whispered in my ear, I think, just so you don't get caught unawares, there's an issue out there. And I don't know whether it is unconstitutional or not, it's just been passed on.
I appreciate that, and we would appreciate the opportunity to direct that question when we come back on 3616.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Just a question, Dave, with this continued competition and ratcheting down in prices, how long now do you project before you have to start paying for the waste?
We're fortunately, we're kind of frozen. They didn't do anything in Idaho, Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer this year, finally. So all we're doing is this bill just simply started out as moving the sunset. And then some other aspects of the discussion. And again, DEQ supports it, AOI supports it, and I hope we never have to pay for it.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. We'll call Jim Witte and Stephen Conforti.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Couture, and Jim and I are here this morning representing EnviroSource, which is a national hazardous waste disposal company, and they operate a facility in Idaho called EnviroSafe, Inc. We agree with Mr. Barrows that it's vitally important that Ian Gross House Bill 2800 pass. We do, however, have amendments, and I'd like to pass those out if I may. I just gave a copy to the other folks. As it's happening, at the end of the session, we just received these amendments this morning, and we were lucky to get them out of legislative council that fast. So I would have presented them earlier if I'd had the opportunity. This waste that we're talking about here, K016, is an interesting critter. It comes out of steel mills, and it's fly ash stuff. It is 20 times as fine as talc, and it's very, very difficult to deal with, and it's a hazardous waste. Our company has been dealing with it for a long number of years, and we have special facilities, special trains that actually drive inside a special building that costs enormous sums of money to build, and pneumatically operate so it keeps all this stuff, because otherwise it would be flying all over. And we take this stuff, and not only do we treat it so that it's safe, but we treat it so that it's not hazardous waste anymore, and it's deposited in a regular landfill. This, as Mr. Barrow said, is a competitive game between, you know, who gets to deal with this stuff, and we feel that we should be the ones to deal with it for two reasons. First of all, we have equipment now, and we don't need to devise a plan. This just calls for devising a plan how to deal with it. We're dealing with it today. And we have the delisting so that we're authorized to deal with it. And further, besides the fact that we think we're better at it and can operate in a more safe manner, we're also getting into this issue of ratcheting down, and we're authorized to say that if this bill unamended passes and we don't adopt our amendment, then it's back to the Idaho legislature. And we assume that the Idaho legislature will ratchet their price down. And it's kind of like a gas station that thinks we can save some money by lowering the price, and then all the cars will get there, and they'll get a lot more revenue. I think that's what DEQ is hoping is going to happen. But oftentimes, as you see in gas wars, what happens to the gasoline station across the street decides they're going to drop their price, too. And so what happens is that you've not only lost your volume, but you've lost your price. And the DEQ does not come out ahead in that situation. So we would suggest that you adopt our amendment, which basically puts us back at the same level. This is the -5 amendment, and takes out the competitive edge that would be adopted. If you notice, it talks about design to achieve treatment levels similar to the treatment levels. Well, we think that it ought to be more than just similar. We think it ought to be the same, that they ought to obtain a delisting, and that they ought to operate the same level we operate. That's it.
covers the issue as far as you're concerned, and are there questions? I think you've made it quite clear where you're driving this.
Thank you, Greg. Just to clarify, the dash four amendments are the proposers amendments, the bill proposers. Those are the Oregon amendments. And the dash five are the Idaho amendments.
Mr. Chair, we have no position on the dash four amendments.
Okay.
The dash four amendments we're fine with.
So I don't conflict.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I'd like to have a response to the dash five amendments from you. In fact, at least stated for the record that you were opposed to the dash five.
For the record,
you go ahead and come on up. Bob Stanko.
The only suggestion, the only comments I guess I'd make, Mr. Chairman, Dave Barrow, for the record, just so that the record's clear, there's nothing in the Section C language that the Idaho facility has to worry to comply with. And they don't, this is for Oregon facilities. And so there are no requirements in Subsection C for the Idaho facility. And the other thing is, the reference was, DEQ has lost money as a result of this ratcheting down of some disposal fees. And that's probably an accurate statement, Mr. Chairman. But the Idaho facility went to the Idaho legislature in 95 and asked them to do this, to start this ratcheting down. We had a parity where everybody was at $30 for all waste. So the ratcheting down scheme that has begun and has probably cost the DEQ money, which has had to be made up by other budget sources, was started by the Idaho facility. This isn't something that we thought made any good sense, but we had to come to this legislature two sessions ago, and again last session, and again this session, to maintain the scheme that keeps our facility competitive.
Thank you. Questions? We hear from you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality, and we are in support of the 2800A version and the Dash 4 amendments being brought forth by the company.
Right. Any questions?
How about, Mr. Chair?
Senator Beyer?
How about the Dash 5?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, we would oppose that amendment. We're mixing apples and oranges here. We feel it's our role to make sure the environment is protected, and really the language in 2800A deals not so much with whether the standards out there, it deals with what the fee is going to be. It crosses over to the economic side. The way we see the bill as written, the company is agreeing to go beyond what we say beyond compliance. They're agreeing to do better than what is required, and they have said if we do that, will you make the fee that we pay on that comparable to what the same waste is charged in Idaho? And we see it as we're getting an environmental benefit because they are going to go beyond compliance. They see it as economic, that yes, indeed, they're going beyond compliance, but they're going to get a fee then that is comparable to Idaho.
And in your opinion, what does the A5 do?
The A5, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, what that does is forces the company to go through what I'd say a very regulatory, bureaucratic process to get a lower fee. And we're coming from the angle that we would rather have the money be spent on actually dealing with the environmental side, not the bureaucratic regulatory side to get the lower fee.
Is there any public benefit for them to go through that?
to do the listing process. Well, legally, that waste would actually, it's interesting, legally, if they went through the listing process and that was delisted as hazardous waste, they could dispose of it then at a solid waste disposal site, and we wouldn't get any hazardous waste fee money for that. Public benefit, yes, anytime that you convert a hazardous waste to a status that isn't a hazardous waste, generally that's good. That's why we were insistent in this language that they do the same thing to similar environmental levels, and that's what the language is. So we get this, you know, relatively the same environmental benefit without the company having to go through the bureaucracy.
Chair Starr, Senator Beyer, the process has never been used in Oregon because it's at least a two-year process. The application fee can rise up to $130,000. And the company's position is there's just not sufficient waste in this one waste stream to justify going through that process.
Any further questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2800 in gross, 2800A in gross, and open the discussion on House Bill 2800A in gross. Chair would like to move the Dash 4 amendment. Any objections? Hearing none, Mr. Berger. Entertain a motion.
I move the House Bill 2800 as amended to the floor of the group pass recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Senator Courtney has moved House Bill 2800 as amended to the floor with the group pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Let's call the roll.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Byron.
Hi.
Senator Stroh.
Hi. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 2800, move to the floor with a new pass recommendation. Senator Barr?
Sure.
Senator Barr will carry. We are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3616A in gross, and we'll call Dave Barron and Don Higginson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Barrows, Chemical Waste Management. Mr. Higginson will walk you through the four sections of the bill, and perhaps the best way to approach this. And then also, we do have, again, the dash, and this one, dash three, if I remember correctly. Yeah, the dash three amendments, which also deal with the same aluminum recycling process that you adopted the fee for in 2800 just a moment ago. Then we'd be delighted to talk about the issue that Senator Courtney raised and others in second one. So if we could just do that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Chair Courtney, Senator Beyer, there are four sections in House Bill 3616. Section 1 addresses the Oregon environmental cleanup laws. Currently, there is a preference in the department's approval or selection of cleanup remedies. There's a preference for treatment. This law would raise the remedy of excavation and off-site disposal to the same level of preference as treatment. And the thought being that treatment on-site sometimes can leave residual contamination. If you have a small or medium amount of contamination, the ability to be able to dig and haul that or excavate it and dispose it off-site can provide some time savings and some cost savings in the process and allow the cleanup to occur much faster. Section 2 of the bill has to do with renewal permits for permitted hazardous waste storage, treatment, and disposal facilities in Oregon, and it establishes conditions that will be included in renewal permits for treatment and disposal facilities that address certain issues like capacity of the facility, transportation issues, technology issues, and setback requirements. And it says that the department in renewing a permit will include conditions in the permit that address those specific Oregon environmental concerns. Section 3 of the bill is kind of a housekeeping bill. At one time, the state of Oregon owned the disposal, the landfills out at Arlington. They were deeded back to the company in 1988, and this was some provisions in the bill that were set there for the state in its ownership role, and because the state doesn't have that ownership role anymore, we're suggesting those provisions be deleted. And finally, Section 4 has to do with public contracting, where the state, because a site is an orphan site, because there's nobody responsible or has the money to clean up the site, and the state comes in and does it, it would recognize in the bidding process for the state of Oregon in the cost to the state of Oregon for the cleanup these fees that we've been talking about that are paid to the state. In some cases, they can be very substantial for a cleanup. And it was felt in determining the lowest responsive or responsible bidder that you should be able to, for the department, recognize the money that's going to come back to the department from disposal fees for the disposal that occurs in Oregon. And this is the four amendments in the main bill, and then the A engrossed -3 amendments would codify the process that the department would use for permitting this recycling facility that's planned for Oregon, that it would provide the permitting modification process the state would use. It would allow the state to recover its costs for processing the application, to charge fees so that the state's reimbursed for their processing time.
Mr. Chairman, and perhaps in order to expedite the conversation, I know others will come and talk to you, but let me just point out that I think sections 2, 3 and the -3 amendments are without controversy. And so I'd like to say just a word, if I could, Mr. Chairman, about Section 4 and then to address Senator Courtney's comment about, or Mr. Higginson perhaps can, about Section 1. As we understand, we haven't seen actual final amendments, the LC amendments on 3616. But in the proposal which the folks from ESI showed us that they had presented, they had proposed deleting Section 4. And I can understand why they would want to, because it, again, gives them a competitive this is the -3. Are there any 3616 amendments otherwise?
Of course.
Okay.
Here we go. Okay.
I'm sorry. No wonder you're a little tiny bit confused. Currently, when a bidder submits a bid to do a clean up an orphan site in Oregon, there's no recognition, because there's no statutory authority for the DEQ to recognize the fact that they are going to actually receive fee money for this work. And the most recent case, McCormick and Baxter, we actually lost. We, being Ken Weiss, actually lost that bid simply because we had no ability to offset with the fee piece, and it made us less competitive than the Idaho facility by a couple of bucks, and the Department of Environmental Quality, as a result, lost 400 and...
Chair Star, members of the committee, the way the numbers worked out, the bid from Idaho was $16,000 lower than the bid for using the Oregon facility. And as a result of the waste going to Idaho, the state of Oregon lost $540,000 in disposal fees. So the $540,000 in disposal fees under the current law, the state determined could not be counted, that would have gone to the department, And because the Idaho bid was $16,000 lower, the waste went to Idaho and the state lost $540,000. So you got a $24,000 swing.
And I believe you will hear from the department that they support the inclusion, the keeping Section 4 in the bill for the very reasons we've outlined. Now, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just for a moment, Section 1, which is the issue of the fact that under this, what's called the dig and haul section, it does say that the waste would have to go to a facility licensed by the state of Oregon. And that does raise, in the minds of a number of people, a constitutional question relative to the Interstate Commerce Clause, and I'd like to ask Mr. Higginson to say a word on that, if it's agreeable with you, Mr. Chairman, in anticipation of the amendment.
Thank you. Chair Starr, members of the committee, when we first worked on this bill and shared the language with the department, it took quite a bit of input from the department. Because this is a department-run program, these are cleanups that are either authorized or selected by the department, we were focusing on Oregon law, and so it focuses on facilities that are licensed under Oregon law. Quite honestly, I didn't look at the constitutional issue at that time, and we had no discussions about the constitutional issue, and now that it's been raised, I can see whether there are some concerns about the constitutional question. We've seen some proposed amendments floating around that would address that. We're willing to consider some amendments. The ones I've seen are not ones that we support. I don't think they do exactly what needs to be done here. So we'd like to have the opportunity to look at those and do some thinking about them and discuss it with the department as well. We do concede that there are some constitutional concerns about where the disposal has to be under a facility license under Oregon law.
Senator Barr, could you point specifically to the bill that you're or the language of the bill that you're going to
get? Chair Starr, Senator Beyer, it's on page 2 of the A and Gross 3616 in line 30, and it's contamination of facility authorized for such disposal under ORS Chapter 459 or 466. ORS Chapter 459 are the solid waste laws and 466 are the hazardous waste laws. So this would restrict this preference for excavation off-site disposal to a facility that was authorized under Oregon law either for solid waste disposal or hazardous waste disposal. These cleanups can either have solid waste in them or have stuff of a higher regulatory concern and have hazardous waste, so it can go to either one of those two facilities. So the amendment we've seen floating around would remove ORS Chapter 459 or 466 and 466 and say Oregon or federal law. And we'd like the opportunity to look at that and think about that. We have some extra thoughts on that, but we don't have the language to and don't have it in the LC to propose our own amendment to that, but we recognize the concern, and because it's been raised, we would like to address it.
Oh, we're not, in your mind, able to move the bill until that language is addressed.
Can I ask a question?
Senator Courtney?
The players you're going to work with to deal with the constitutional terms are main two of the players are going to be. You're going to work with the agency, which is DEQ, is that right? Are you going to work with legislative council to draft these bills?
Chair Carr, Senator Courtney, certainly.
Well, I'm not trying to be insulting. I'm going to do something later on today where legislative council was left out, and it shouldn't have been because they raised a rather significant. They do know a little about what they're doing, but I'm not trying to insult them. I just added that the lawyer who drafted the bill, as you're working with DEQ and yourselves, get them on board too, because there's no reason they can't be called, but they just, let me just make that suggestion.
Yeah, Chair Starr, Senator Courtney, and Jeanette Holman deserves some kudos for the timeliness with the amendments and the drafting of the bill, and she's raised some excellent issues, and I think this is one that we just didn't really focus on, and so it hasn't been discussed and hasn't been raised, and we certainly would anticipate.
Well, the materials I had were not raised by her. It was raised, Neil gave me, I could get this. I don't know who, I guess.
Mr. Lindley.
Yes. Yes, and I don't know, Paul, I don't know who these players are. I guess I should, but anyway, they weren't raised by her. They were raised by these other types of players. The little birdie whispered in my ear about it. So anyway, I just want to help at the end, the dead year that we have those players. Well, thank you, Mr. Deere, for
the
report.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. We have same...
Counterpoint
here. Let's have...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Witte and Steve Kofori, representing in Violet Source. 3616 is a bill that I don't think has to pass. I think it should pass in some form. It is an improvement on the comprehensive cleanup law revisions of 1995 that a number of the people in the room actually were involved with. I think Mr. Hagenson adequately addressed the issues before you, as well as Mr. Barrows. We don't have a problem with the Dash amendments that they are supporting. We are simply putting forth the Dash 4s. They address Sections 1 and Section 4. Section 1, I think, has been adequately discussed, and I think we would like to be involved in working out that language there. The memorandum, I believe, is now before you, and Senator Courtney already had, I think, is from Tom Lindley, an environmental attorney in Oregon of long standing, and has appeared in this legislature on other environmental issues, has prepared that. It raises serious Commerce Clause problems under the United States Commerce Clause, Constitution, and DEQ is under notice that if these are not addressed, there will be a lawsuit. I'm not going to use that as a threat, but you should understand that fact. We believe that, the company believes that Sections 1 and Section 4 both violate that clause. So I'm not going to make a legal argument to you. I don't think that's my role. That's not your role necessarily to judge that legal argument, but you should understand our belief in the facts, therefore we put that argument before you in the form of that memorandum.
I might also add, Mr. Chair, the memorandum is also from the Paul Garahan as well as the Tom Lindley. I think we should note that for what that's worth.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Garahan is an associate at the law firm of Perkins Coie.
It's going to be very big, very technical. You do that when you're a lawyer, type of thing. Okay.
Thank you.
I'd just like to add that was, Senator Courtney was nice of him to offer to these gentlemen should go to legislative council to work that. We would also hope that Senator Courtney would suggest to them that they work out the constitutional problems with the opponents of the bill as well.
Sure. I want you all to learn to love each other. I want, if it's only been men, I want, well, there is a woman, I was going to talk about male bondage, there is a woman, so I want you all to love each other.
Thank you.
We'll have Bob Anko come up and talk to the bill.
Thank you, Thomas.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality, and we support the bill 3616, and we also support the Dash 3 amendments that have been brought forward by the company. To the concerns raised by the last speakers, we agree with their concerns on Section 1 of the bill. I talked to our attorney this morning, we think that is a constitutional problem, needs to be fixed. We don't agree with the concerns raised on the constitutionality of Section 4. It's interesting that Section 4 relates to waste that DEQ controls. It's called orphan site waste, and we are, in effect, the legal term, I'm an engineer, but the legal term, I believe, is market participant, meaning that it's our waste and we're just like a business like anybody else, and we can, the state can direct, it's the state's waste, the state can direct that waste anywhere. So we're not sympathetic to the constitutional argument on Section 4. We are on Section 1.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
bringing this issue to us and ask that you follow up, get the legal clarification, work with the parties in opposition if, as possible, and then, yes, let the committee administrator know when you're ready. We'll bring this bill back as soon as possible.
I assume that Mr. Smith is authorized to give the note to Mother.
That's correct.
Did you
call
you Mother?
No.
Oh.
Legislative Council.
I know it.
All right. Let's close the public hearing on House Bill 3616, and we're going to get the Committee on Rules and Elections, and the House will write down to the Senate floor where we will